And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, I don't want our show to go from the sublime to the ridiculous. And actually, there's something that might be important about this, but at face value, it looks ridiculous. What do you make of the fact that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced for president he's going to run against Biden in the primaries for president, but immediately Roger Stone and Steve Bannon came up and said the ideal ticket for America at this time is Trump for president and RFK Jr. for vice president?
Well, it wasn't so immediate. Steve Bannon apparently has been working on this thing for months. And when you look at RFK Jr. and Bannon and Stone, what you find out they have in common is that they're disruptors. And Steve Bannon, and they're also could be considered grifters. RFK Jr. has made a lot of money or taken in a lot of money over these phony claims about vaccines being unsafe. And he's
the leading anti-vaxxer in America.
Yes. Even though the study that he originally relied upon has been debunked and has been withdrawn and disproved. But he has decided, for whatever reason, that he will continue to promote that study and its findings and going around. It's sort of like the this guy David Palmer, I believe his name is, who goes around telling people what they want to hear about the United States is a Christian nation, makes money off of this thing.
Yo, Palmer contrary, believes that kind of stuff. Palmer's a true believer. He's not merely a grifter. He's just figured out that he can make money off of what he really believes.
Yeah, and it's interesting that RFK, his wife isn't even with him on that one issue, although she stood with him when he made his announcement for president, but his siblings did not. His siblings did not, and the rest of the Kennedy clan is not with him on that thing.
But, well, RFK Jr. used to be one of the leading environmentalists in the country.
Yeah, and he still is to an extent, except that he's, I don't want to say abandoned that cause, but he's allowed this anti-vax cause to overshadow the environmental cause.
But from the viewpoint of Bannon and Stone, I think he's playing he's a perfect guy, because these two fascist organizers are looking for a way to portray themselves as unifiers. What better than the alleged inheritor of the liberal mantle of the liberal Kennedy family allied to Trump? What could be better for the purposes of trying to fool people that we have here a national unity ticket?
Yeah. You know, there was that attempt by QAnon a year or so ago that said that it wasn't RFK Jr., but JFK Jr., who was going to come back from wherever he had been hiding and appear at the Grassy Knoll in Dallas, and would become Trump's vice president, and then Trump would resign and JFK Jr. would become president. And you had people camping out in Dallas, Texas for weeks waiting for that thing to happen. It's got some
but
sort
that's
of...
The loopy, that's the loopy contingent, right?
Well, there's a lot of loopiness in people that follow Bannon and Stone. And the anti-vaxxers as well.
Well, but they provide it strikes me the background noise. They provide the stagecraft for the truly horrible stuff that people then allow. Look at Cleta Mitchell, this lawyer who used to be an established, respected lawyer who was Trump's, one of the main handmaidens for Trump carrying water on the stolen election fraud. She just spoke to the Republican National Committee Convention. not a group of nobodies. This is the leaders of the Republican Party. And her whole point was, don't let students, college students, vote. That was her whole point.
That's it. You know, there's a, well, the Republican Party has invested itself heavily in stopping various peoples from voting. And, you know, college students, this has been one of their thrusts in various states. For instance, I believe like in Texas, they've said that you need an ID in order to be able to vote, a government ID. But they won't allow student IDs, which are issued by the government for state schools, to be one of them. You can have a hunting license, that's good, but not the University of Texas ID. And that's carried over into a number of states. Some states have told students that they cannot vote in their state, that they have to vote in their home state, or that even if they're from in-state, that they cannot vote in the town that they're at, that they have to go back to their hometown in order to vote. There's even a nascent movement now, despite the fact that there's a constitutional amendment to the contrary, to say that 18, 19, and 20-year-olds shouldn't be allowed to vote.
On what basis?
Basically on the basis that the people promoting the new law don't think that the kids will vote for them.
Right. Well, that's a good argument. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I can see that.
But, you know,
but they surely don't make that the point they're arguing for. They must have some, you know, structural nonsense that they talk about, right?
Yeah. Well, but I saw a vote this week, a quote this week. I don't have the exact wording, but in essence is when you don't have any real policies that you can run on or that are popular, what you try to do is stop people from voting.
That's a strategy.
And they've been fairly successful at that. And even when the votes are questioned, you know, and questioned unsuccessfully, they don't give up on it. I mean, look at Fulton County, Pennsylvania, just got held in contempt of court because they played games with the certifying the election of 2020. And the Supreme Court said, you know, you can't do this. You got to show us, you know, you toyed with your data. We want to see everything that you've had, and they've refused to produce things.
But even when they allow votes or when votes take place that they'd like to not have take place, but they take place and people get elected whom they'd like to see not get elected, but they did get elected, they get rid of them. For example, the case of the two young people, formerly student organizers in Tennessee, who were organizing against gun violence. So they expelled them from the legislature, even though they'd gotten elected to the legislature, they expelled them from the legislature. And then in Montana, a transgender guy who was elected to the Montana legislature spoke in favor of transgender rights, and the Republicans voted to not allow him to speak on any subject for the rest of the legislative session. Any subject.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, so what's the difference if you get elected, right?
Yeah. And of course, they're not just shutting these people up, but they're shutting up the voters who elected them.
Yeah,
the thousands of voters.
Right. But in other words, the point is, even if they can't stop the vote, then they stop the result of the vote.
Right.
If they can't stop the result of the vote, then they just don't let the person elected do anything.
Yeah.
That's democracy, right? That's American democracy. That's what we have to go to war for. That's why we're fighting everywhere. That's why we're sending trillions of dollars in guns to anybody, both who need it and who just want it, so that we can export American democracy. What is it we're exporting?
What you touched on, I want to go back for a second, because you touched on topics that are animating the younger voters. One is guns and the issue of guns. And you've got this generation that's come up that has been literally under the gun. When I was in school, we used to have these drills, about air raid drills, about an attack on the United States.
Did you sit in the hallway with your hands over your head?
Right. Or under your desk, duck and cover. Remember those?
Yeah, how is that? How does your hands over your head protect you from radiation? I never understood that.
It was just something to give people a sense or an assurance that things were being done and would be okay. They knew it wasn't, the experts knew that it wasn't going to be sufficient. But
kids who refused to do it were thrown out of class.
Now the kids are just leaving class and marching. And this has the Republican Party scared to death because they're marching the kids are marching to save their lives and to have reasonable, not crazy, but reasonable gun laws. And the legislature don't want to do it because they get funded by the NRA. And they're beholden to their fundraisers. Now, both parties, to an extent, are beholden to their funders, but the Republicans are beholden to these policies that they're the distinct minority on.
And not only that, but the people who own guns in this country are a small minority. There's not 20% who are gun owners.
Well,
about 80% are not gun owners.
Well, but more and more people are now buying guns. But even among gun owners, they don't want to have just anybody buy a gun nilly-willy.
Or even willy-nilly.
Willy-nilly, yes. They want reasonable. They don't want people who have mental problems buying guns. Criminal people who have a bad record buying guns and having guns.
But who else besides people with mental problems buys a gun? Why do you buy a gun? If you're not a hunter, and there are not that many hunters, but if you're not a hunter, why are you buying a gun? You're buying a gun to shoot people because you think the cops aren't going to protect you or you think blacks or immigrants are going to attack you. And if you think immigrants and black people are going to attack you, you're like that guy that shot the fellow who was knocking on his door because he was going to pick up his brother and he went to the wrong house. Or right. You're like the guy who shot the girls who drove up the driveway because they didn't know where they were going and they got lost, so they went up the driveway to make a U-turn.
Yeah.
That's at best, it's either racism or insanity.
But there's two other things that branch out from that. Number one, it's not just other people, but there's a whole group that think that the government is the problem and that they need to arm themselves against the government intruding.
That would be fine. I'd even support that. But you know what? Pistols don't beat howitzers.
And number two, and particularly with regard to that 84-year-old fellow who shot the black kid who was just knocking on his door, he's been trained in fear.
That's
this
right.
Is what the Republican Party had, I keep repeating that line from Margaret Chase Smith back from the 1950s. Fear, bigotry, those kind of things, ignorance. And his relatives, I think his grandson came out and said, the guy watches Fox News all day. And that's all they do on a loop. They show things, black people creating problems and making people fearful of them.
Well, where Fox News is concerned, now we know, and they've admitted, and they've paid for the fact that they broadcast things they know to be false just because they want to keep an audience that they've already indoctrinated with certain ideas, and they want to make sure they stick with them rather than with other people who indoctrinate them with the same ideas.
Well, they barely admitted it.
Yeah. They didn't admit it. Right, exactly.
They paid $787.5 million without having to
admit it.
Openly admit it. They acknowledged that the judge found out that they lied.
Yeah.
But, of course, that's blaming the judge.
Yeah.
And they didn't make their they didn't want their personalities, and they didn't want the Murdochs to have to get on the stand and then be quoted on this stuff. They barely covered the settlement. And
by the way, of the settlement, the 800 or whatever million dollars it is, they apparently have a tax write-off of $260 million of that. So it doesn't cost them that. And it's a lot of money still.
But still.
But about a third of it, yeah. You're going to pick up, and I'm going to pick up, and other people who pay taxes are going to pick up.
Well, there.
And I didn't do it.
Yes. And that should be changed in the law, that penalties like that should not be write. You can't write off. But they're not done yet. Don't forget, Smartmatic is actually suing for almost twice as much as Dominion, and they've got the benefit of everything that Dominion had. And Smartmatic has got come out. Their lawyers said, we are not going to settle unless there's a statement to our liking to admit this. So we'll have to see. I don't know when that suit is going to go forward or who the judge is going to be in that suit. That matters a lot. And there's another.
But the point is that this shows the fact that you can't overcome politics with private action. Courts can't substitute for democratic debate and democratic give and take, because the court system benefits the private interests of the person who sues or is being sued. And that often has nothing to do with the public interest. It was the private interest of Dominion to settle, because after all, any case could go either way. They had a settlement. They got them. The company was bought by the people who owned the company for something like $15 million. And now they're getting $800 million. That's a hell of an increase in asset value. They were right to settle.
Return.
Yeah,
that's
a pretty good return. But had nothing to do with the significance of the case. It only had to do with their benefit.
Yeah. I'll quickly say, but there's another group that's a little bit wider, and that's the shareholders of Fox. And there's going to be shareholder derivative suits saying that their board of directors were negligent in allowing this to happen.
That's right. But it's a very indirect way. It's not a political victory. Because it's not fought in the political realm. It's fought in a legal realm and fought in a realm of private interest. And there is a difference between public and private interest. It's just that simple.
And I've been very outspoken in the fact of a lot of times you get in other suits, particularly personal injury suits, you get these secret settlements where they said, we settled the case, but you can't know the terms of it. We don't know how much, and nobody admits liability or responsibility. They just go away. But there are larger suits that you have the tobacco settlement for one, the asbestos settlement for another. And then you get into the drug situation. And, that this week we had, because that is a larger issue that's public policy.
You mean with however you say it.
That's easy for you to say.
it's impossible for me to say. I've never been able to pronounce the word.
Yeah. But
Mifepristone, right.
Mifepristone.
Mifepristone, okay. Either way.
And the judge down in Texas issued a nationwide ban on, effectively. And now the Supreme Court has said, we're going to lift that ban pending further scrutiny by the appellate court.
But here, I think the judges really have a problem, because they've got the drug industry, big pharma on one side, and the religious nuts on the other side. Who are they going to go with? They're beholden to both of them.
I bet on the money.
You bet on the money. Drug companies win, church loses.
On that. Now, we don't know for sure, but that's the way the world tends to work on these things. So I would see with the drug companies. When it comes to business and money, we had Ron DeSantis this week started losing contributors over the fact that he's attacking a business. Chris Christie issued a devastating critique of Ron DeSantis over what getting into this war with Mickey Mouse, mm-hmm. and he essentially said that he's disqualified himself from becoming president. He said the Republican Party used to be the party of business. And you're attacking the biggest business in your state. You're going to have people lose jobs. And he said, and then you get outflanked by the board of directors and you didn't even see it coming. He said, how the heck are you going to be able to negotiate with China if you don't understand what the counter moves could be.
Even Trump attacked him for the same on the same basis. Yeah,
Trump's been going at him on the Social Security issue, and of course they also went. He also went at him on the eating pudding with your fingers issue.
Yeah,
but that's only a small amount of humor in a very.
But that is the kind of thing that is more telling than any disagreement on policy.
People relate to that.
That's right. That's what Trump understands.
Yes.
Or even if he doesn't understand it, that's what he does.
Yeah. The Washington Post, I think, reissued or got referenced in a column this week, Robert Kagan's 2016 article about how fascism comes to America. And, you know, before Trump was elected. And the prescience of that article is phenomenal. If you get a subscription to the Washington Post, or you can go to a library and read it. But it's
what do you say? What do you say?
Well, in essence, you know, it's about dividing people into the other and acting as some sort of a savior. It becomes a personality cult. And the strongman theory that I keep talking about, Ruth Ben-Ghiat. Every week I'm privy to her her conference call, and she just analyzes this stuff perfectly all the time. This is a personality cult that people want or perceive strength. You know, you hear that criticism of the Democrats. They're weak. They're weak. There's a reason that they keep repeating that, is that they believe the Republicans and the fascists believe that strength is a virtue, and it's that it sells. It sells to people.
But the strength that they're talking about is always the strength to grind down the weak, grind down the poor, grind down the defenseless. Well, that's who they really want to display strength against.
And of course, what it does is it puts them in power, and the people who have backed them are the ones that suffer.
Only the people who vote for them suffer. The people who back them benefit.
Well, the people who vote for them suffer. That's a better a better way of putting it. But not necessarily. You know, the strongman can turn on his support. Look at how many of Vladimir Putin's buddies have had falling out of window syndrome affect them.
Illness is illness.
Yeah, well, there's a cure for that. It's called the sidewalk.
That's right. It stops the fall.
It stops the fall. You know, the old joke, the guy falling out of a, 50-story building, and someone on the 30th floor says, "How you doing?" He says, "So far, so good."
Right. But listen, the Republicans have hardly abandoned pro-corporate policies. I mean, the McCarthy bill, it's not even a bill, but Kevin McCarthy's demand again to Biden to say, well, we'll pay for what we spent. We'll agree to raise the debt limit, but only for a few months to pay for what we already spent.
Right.
What he wants in return is that spending on the VA should be cut by 22%.
Yeah.
That work requirements for food stamps should be raised from the people who are 50, where it is now, to people who are 59. And on and on and on. And basically, he wants to cut discretionary spending. All discretionary spending in the federal budget amounts to 30% of the federal budget. You can't achieve a significant reduction in the deficit, even assuming that's something you'd like to have, that's something good. If you abolished all of it, if you cut all discretionary spending, you wouldn't get to where you say you're aiming for. So the proposal is spurious, is phony, is a lie to begin with. It's just to curry favor with reactionaries, to make believe that somehow poor people, old people, minority people, they're the cause of your trouble. And if we cut them out, if we get rid of them, then all problems will be solved. Whereas if you got rid of them, you still would have the same problem. There's not enough problem. There's not enough to get rid of. That's not the issue.
Well, Ruth Ben-Gvir, you know, she talks about Mussolini, who was the original fascist. And at one point, because he was stealing things, and that's what these grifters do when they're in government, they steal. He made a speech in which he said to the Italian people, "You only need to eat once a day." So, but I'm your savior, and that's what, you know, the places where they cut money for school lunches, but they raise their own salaries, like in one of the
Dakotas. Didn't raise their own. In South Dakota, they cut the they voted. The Republicans voted to end the school lunch program at the same meeting that they did that. Not even the next day. The same meeting, they voted to increase their own lunch allowance by 40%.
That's effectively raising, giving themselves a backdoor raise.
That was incredible, right? It's shameless. In Iowa, the Republicans just voted. And by the way, the South Dakota Democrats stayed up all night to do that. In Iowa, they stayed up all night to make sure that the child labor laws that were established in the 1910s were repealed so that children now could work any number of hours in any industry.
Yeah, they could work late at night, overnight. They could work as young as, 12 or 14, something like that?
Yeah, 12, exactly, right. And in West Virginia, the Republicans are making speeches about how people who are 11 and 12 should be allowed to marry because why not?
Why not? It's West Virginia.
It's West Virginia. Why not? That's our tradition. That's our tradition. You're talking about a regression to a pre-industrial world. That's the America that they'd like to have. You can't even say make America great again. America wasn't like, you know, of course, child labor was there. That's why there was a progressive movement in the 1910s to get rid of child labor. They'd like to get rid of that. Then even Franklin Roosevelt, they haven't gotten to him yet. They want to go beyond him. Child labor? You know, if you really want to, if you really want to solve the budget crisis, kill all the old people. Who's the Englishman who said that they should eat the children?
Congressman for saying that?
Huh?
Didn't they censure a congressman for saying that a couple of years ago?
Kill the old people?
That was a Republican plan for health care.
That's right. Get rid of the old people. But you know what? I think he was right.
He might have been. You know, talking about child labor, Joe Biden's appointment for Secretary of Labor is getting a very hard time.
Is she going to get – will she make it?
I don't know. Her name is Sue. Yeah. Last name is Sue.
Yeah.
But the one of the critiques was that she, you know, never met a payroll and, you know, never ran a business. And as was pointed out, a couple of things. Number one, the Republicans had no problem appointing Betsy DeVos to education, who had never gone to public schools and had never been a teacher and knew nothing about education.
And in any case, the Department of Labor is supposed to represent workers' interests, not corporate interests.
That was the other point. You know, it's supposed to be of labor, not of management.
Right.
If you want, you already have a cabinet department, the Department of Commerce.
Right.
That works on behalf of business.
Right. That's that. Well, listen, we're out of time. They're out of. They're not out of ideas. They're out of good ideas. Well, they never had any good ideas.
That was my rule number two. Ideas matter.
Ideas matter. Listen, we left off about half the stuff that we thought we needed to cover today because there was too much. This was a hell of a week. But we'll get to it next week.
We'll do next week. Okay.
You think Lindell will pay the $5 million? That's what I want to know.
Well, he's going to try every way to get out of it. I mean, look at Alex Jones's try to avoid things. But
All right. We'll see. See you next week.
I'm not buying any pillows to help.
Don't buy any pillows.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.